Coming up next, from the grassy knoll, a terrifying look into the Orwellian world of brainwashing, disinformation, and ultimately, control over
you.
I'm not supposed to say. Whoops, I better turn that down.
This is time. Is this time we're recording? No.
Yeah, that's okay, because I'm going to trim it off.
All right, but that changes real time now to 29 minutes, maybe.
Well, yeah, but that's okay. Right, I'll keep track. A few seconds here or there. Once again, you are listening to Community Radio in Dade City from the grassy knoll, and I'm not supposed to say press play.
That's right.
So this is Dr. Swain, and naturally you are
Visigoth.
Yeah.
Visigoth, that's right. I want to ask you a question to start this segment off with. Have you ever encountered, especially of late, a certain activity around a quasi-religion called Luciferianism?
I'm starting to see, maybe not specifically under that name, but I'm certainly seeing a lot of innuendo and references to occult activities.
Did you see something recently?
Recently on the Today Show, unbelievable, where they had a resurgence of people interested in magic and the occult, and actually had a 15-year-old girl on who said her idols, you know, of course, were magicians, prestidigitators, but
bonus word there.
Well,
bonus word.
That's what that is, right?
Right. Yeah.
But it seemed quite harmless. You know, she was talking about, sleight of the hand and tricks and keeping people focused on certain things and other things. But then she went on to say that, that this had all propagated as a result of her interest in the occult sciences.
If you listen to the Art Bell Show, especially, and I would assert that he's a Luciferian, and of course his shows are greatly dedicated to some interesting things and ghosts and all this stuff, but also to Luciferianism. And what we're going to talk about today is the Luciferic Initiation. And this you can read about, again, on the website watch.pair, as in two, pair.com.
Now, all repeat right? that again.
It's watch.pair.com.
Okay.
That's where this comes from.
So let me interject something also, is that we realize that some of the websites that we give you probably are, as I like to say, like drinking off the end of the fire hose trying to write something down. So one of the changes we're going to make, or additions rather, to the PascoRadio.org is that we're going to put a little button in there for sites we've mentioned and then a brief description so you can go and search these things out and find them yourself.
Sure. We start off with the grand matron of theosophy, the uglier than a can of hookworms, Madame Blavatsky. Doesn't that conjure images of somebody with a kerchief around her head and hoop earrings,
Blavatsky.
With a crystal ball? Blavatsky. Anyway.
Are these like the gypsy type?
No. She was Russian. Don't do that to me.
I'm telling you.
Hey, all right. She was Russian. She was, as it's stated, the grand matron of theosophy.
Okay.
She gave up the scepter to Annie Besant.
And what is a theosophist?
You can look this up, and basically just a non-Judeo-Christian religion. Okay. You know, everything is cool.
Yeah.
God is everything.
There's
everywhere.
Life in rocks and
Okay. And we should worship them.
Yeah. Okay.
The writings of Blavatsky, Annie Besant, and Charles Ledbetter were translated and published in German. Funny how that always happens. Giving inspiration for the formation of other theosophy-based groups in Germany and Austria. Several of these societies would provide the philosophical framework for Nazism. What a coincidence. One of these was the Thule Society, and that's spelled T-H-U-L-E. And I used to always call it Thule, and I like it better like that, being a Nordic myself.
Yeah.
However, if you remember the Prince Valiant comic strip that was in on every Sunday, that was his kingdom. Okay? And it was always thought to be, in legend, the most northern province. Maybe Norway, maybe Iceland, maybe Greenland. Okay?
Okay.
Maybe Dade City.
Maybe not. Right, no. Yeah.
All right, the Thule Society, formed in 1912, whose prominent leaders include Rudolf Hess and Dietrich Eckhart. A famous member of the Thule Society, Adolf Hitler, underwent a Luciferic initiation assisted by his spiritual mentor, Dietrich Eckhart. In the book, Hitler and the New Age, author Bob Rosio records the words of Meister Eckhart. And if I could right here, this was kind of a nice discovery. When I started to read this and research it, I didn't realize that this would lead me to Bob Rosio. Now, in the late 80s, I sat under Bob Rosio, who is still to this day a pastor and a teacher in the jointly incorporated Cheswick Christian Academy and Church. I really respect Bob Rosio, because he is a historian, he's an intellect, he is a very down-earth Christian. He sent me this book, Hitler and the New Age, after I had left Pittsburgh. I read this book in 1993, and never before did I ever countenance that there was a satanic and occult connection with not only Hitler, but the whole Third Reich. And this is one of those things, one of these bricks in the wall that start to build something. I wasn't thinking the way I was now, but that was one of those books, that was some of the information that when I look back at, I realized that that placed the seed in my head, that what's going on, that has always gone on, is that you have people who either serve the Lord or serve Mammon. Now, getting back to the words of Meister Eckhart, I shall have influenced history more than any other German. Follow Hitler. I have initiated him into the secret doctrine, opened his centers to vision, and given him the means to communicate with the powers. Rosio explains this as a Luciferic initiation. He established communication with Lucifer, this is Hitler, from whom he openly coveted possession, entering into the service of Satan through a Luciferic initiation. Rosio briefly reviewed the tragic holocaust of human lives, not only of Jewry, but of Hitler's own Aryan race. Beyond these well-known facts, however, this author interpreted for the reader Hitler's true motive according to the, quote, secret doctrine of Satan. And this is Rosio writing. Robert Cecil said, "The blood of Christ was replaced by the blood of the German war dead. Their true value to Hitler was as a sacrifice to the bloodthirsty god he served. From the Mayas to the Nazis, the shedding of blood to attract the attention of indifferent powers was the magic significance of human sacrifice. He would have sacrificed the happiness of the whole human race if ordered to do so by the mysterious force whose commands he obeyed. This mentally caused Hitler to say, 'Our losses never seem to be high enough.' He had realized that Satan's thirst for sacrificial death was unquenchable. It also explains why Hitler's own bloodlust increased to a frenzy as the end was in sight. Hitler's war in Russia illustrated his total confidence in the occult powers which owned him, and his willingness to sacrifice human lives. Hitler believed that his covenant with the occult powers enabled him to control the weather. He felt that the Russian winter would melt away before him as his forces invaded Russia. This belief was based on the occult theory of fire and ice. Hitler would be fire. Russia would be ice. He boldly sent his armies into Russia with no winter clothes and against the advice of his general staff. When the German offensive began to falter and young Germans began to die by the thousands, his generals begged him to order a retreat. Instead, Hitler said, 'Attack. As to the cold, I will see to that.' When the German offensive was halted within sight of Moscow, Hitler saw it only as a test requiring more human sacrifice. He saw Stalingrad, however, as the true test. Recognizing Stalingrad as a sacred city of the ancient Aryans, he felt that no amount of human suffering or death was too high a price to pay for its conquest, that if he were faithful to Satan at Stalingrad, he would be given the final victory." Now, exoterically, the nation of Germany was led to believe that the gods were purifying the human race. That means the general mass, exoterically. Right. All right. Esoterically, which is the elite, the inner circle, they understood they were beginning the process of annihilating mankind. Again from Rosio. The word Holocaust comes from a 3rd century Greek word, holokaustos, referring to the burnt sacrificial offering of the Jews dedicated exclusively to God. The Holocaust was Hitler's fiery offering of human sacrifice to Satan, just as in the days of the heathen Amorite god Moloch. The bloodlust of the coming Antichrist will continue in the tradition set by Hitler, making Hitler's incredible hate seem moderate in comparison. And we move ahead to a book called The Trojan Horse, How the New Age Movement Infiltrates the Church, by Brenda Scott and Samantha Smith. They present a very different view of the, quote, noble savage, unquote, than does Margaret Mead. Stuart Pigott, a respected archaeologist and recognized authority on Celtic history, agrees. It is hardly realistic to exculpate the Druids from participation, probably active, in both the beliefs and practices involved in human sacrifice. The Druids were the wise men of barbarian Celtic society, and Celtic religion was their religion, with all its crudities. It is sheer romanticism and a capitulation to the myth of the noble savage to imagine that they stood by the sacrifices duty-bound, but with disapproval on their faces and elevated thoughts in their mind. Scott and Smith also associate the Order of Freemasons and the British royal family.
You can't get away from those two, can you? It always goes back.
Keep your eyes on Prince Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Jazz. Charles.
Yeah, because he is called the sustainable prince. This guy is going to reemerge as a power. I say reemerge because we all laugh at the British monarchy. Well, don't laugh at it, because the monarchies in the New World Order are coming back to kick butt.
Yeah.
And he is going to definitely be sitting on the top of the dung pile. And, of course, we know that he whacked his wife, Prince Diana.
Nah,
we know that.
That was an accident. No, too fast, didn't he?
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, no problem. She goes off with an Arab, which is a slap in the face to the Crusaders. You get it? It's a throwback. So she goes off with an infidel.
She's a school teacher.
They're the worst.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Didn't she come from relatively modest means, actually? It was kind of...
Well, in a sense, yes. Yeah. But, however, they consider her in the bloodline closer to the throne. I believe she is descendant from the Stuarts, who reportedly had their throne appropriated by...
Right. He's
the
actually,
Windsors.
His last name is Windsor, right?
Who's?
Charles.
Yeah, Chaz.
Yeah.
All right. Scott and Smith also associate the Order of Freemasons and the British royal family with the Druid tradition. And this is them writing.
By the way, my neighborhood is Druid Hills.
And I don't doubt it.
I'm serious.
I've been through there. Don't stop.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Druid traditions were also preserved with Freemasonry, which is thought to have evolved from the Druids or at least alongside of them. The connection is addressed in Gould's History of Freemasonry. The three-part structure of the Masons is identical to the three offices of Druidic priesthood, Ovates, Bards, and Druids. Also, the secret teachings embodied therein are practically the same as the mysteries concealed under the allegories of Blue Lodge Masonry. Political and religious suppression forced the Druids to go underground. Many thought that the religion had disappeared, but it survived, handed down within families and villages to resurface again in the early 18th century. There are three main Druidic colleges. In fact, Druidism has become so accepted socially that Queen Elizabeth II and the Prince of Wales both accepted posts as honorary Druids in the Wales Gorsedd.
Now, how does Greenspan, with this recent knighting, how does he figure into all this?
Well, as we know, when you get knighted, you get taken in by the British crown and the Rothschilds, most likely. I mean, you throw everything else to the wind. And when you take these orders, as we'll discuss down the road, I mean, you basically kiss your country and your God goodbye. Now, this is David Spangler saying, and with regard to Luciferianism, Lucifer works within each of us to bring us to wholeness. Isn't that warm and loving? As we move into a new age, each of us in some way is brought to that point which I term the Luciferic initiation, that particular doorway through which the individual must pass if he is to come fully into the presence of his light and wholeness. Lucifer prepares man in all ways for the experience of Christhood. I mean, can you see the mix of lies? The light that reveals to us the presence of the Christ comes from Lucifer. He is the light giver. He is aptly named the morning star, lie, because it is his light that heralds for man the dawn of a great consciousness. He stands as the great initiator, the one who hands the soul over to Christ. And this is very key, Dr. Swain, especially as it seeps into the Judeo-Christian worship mode. Lucifer is acquiring a new image, even in evangelical circles. Modern Bibles now designate Lucifer, quote, the morning star. And that, Dr. Swain, has always been attributed to Christ. It replaces his true identity as the son of the morning. Now, Lucifer, or Satan, is called the angel of light. So there's where that light motif comes into. But now they're trying to turn it so that he becomes the morning star, which has always been reserved to and connected to Jesus Christ. One speaker at the Melbourne conference publicly identified the Masonic orders as the hidden hand guiding mankind into the Church of Lucifer. One of the long-standing goals of the Masonic New World Order seems finally within grasp. It's one world church, as we know that it's going to be headed by the Vatican, in the making for over 150 years. It is about to become institutionalized as the United Religions Organization, as they would say, the URO. In the reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of Wisdom, Benjamin Crame stated that millions of people will take the Luciferic initiation. Through the Masonic initiation and certain esoteric groups will come the process of initiation. In this coming age, millions of people will take the first and second initiation through these transformed and purified institutions. The author of Hitler in the New Age, Rosio, emphasized that the Holocaust was a mere dress rehearsal. Now listen to this. That the Holocaust was a mere dress rehearsal for the final solution, which will well nigh succeed after, or rather, under the rule of the Antichrist. The opening performance is scheduled to begin after Lucifer has been properly summoned to play the leading role. And this is Rosio writing. Those who form the core of occultism in the New Age movement also stress that the New Age they are promoting will come about through an ongoing invocation of Lucifer. The stress that all those who enter this New Age will enter it through a Luciferic initiation, just as Hitler did. Is this too much for you there, Dr. Swain?
No.
All right. Moving on next to the motif of death in Luciferianism. Beltane, or May Day, is recognized by the occult as the day on which Lucifer, or Baal, rises from the netherworld.
Now what?
May 1st.
May 1st, interesting. Isn't that also the founding day for the Illuminati?
Yes, it is. Exactly. So it's got a very key prominence in a lot of cross-cultural type situations and geopolitical situations.
That was the day I started.
No.
Oh.
Don't give that away.
Okay.
All right. This is a quote. Bill Clinton, in his inaugural speech, said, "This ceremony is held in the depths of winter, but by the words we speak and the faces we show the world, we force the spring." Clinton repeated the words, "We force the spring," later in his speech. That expression is a very unusual expression, to force the spring. It is witchcraft language. In witchcraft and Satanism, Lucifer rises from the underworld on May 1st, known by the following list of names, Beltane and Walpurgis. Aleister Crowley, a very interesting character, thought that the great work is the transformation of humanity. We are told that the great work may only be begun in the spring under the signs of Aries, Taurus, and Gemini. It was May 1st when the ancient Druids honored their sun god and goddess with an uninhibited festival complete with initiations, sex orgies, drunken revelry, and human sacrifice. I've seen a few of them myself, I think.
Yes. Maybe all not right. The sacrifice, but...
No. Right. Otherwise, it's just a soul ball game in the summertime. Alice Bailey, successor to Annie Besant, as president of the Theosophical Society, wrote in 1942, "Man understands meaning when he identifies with his soul and not his form. Then he will deliberately choose to die." Richard Kirby of the Society for Promoting Christian Knowledge echoed Bailey's call to death in his 1979 book, The Mission of Mysticism. Christians know that a man must die to himself before he can be born again in spirit. It may well be that mankind as a whole must be crucified, even unto death, before coming into its inheritance. Christians can say, with Teilhard de Chardin, that before coming into its inheritance, that death itself is beneficent, the only way to grow beyond forms which have served their limited purpose. But with the serious and the worried, they look upon the possible extermination of the human race, securing the knowledge that it could be but a prelude to the resurrection of the species. In esoteric Christianity, Annie Besant delineated for mankind a law of sacrifice, which she supposes underwrites the hope that is given to the deluded souls who will literally choose to die at the planned extermination of the human race. This is Besant. We can trace in the religions of the world four great stages of instruction in the law of sacrifice. First, man was taught to sacrifice part of his material possession in order to gain increased material prosperity. Secondly, instead of physical prosperity and worldly good, the fruit to be gained by sacrifice was celestial bliss. The third lesson came when a man, seeing himself as part of a greater life, was willing to sacrifice himself for the good of the whole. The hero soul, thus trained, was ready for the fourth lesson, that sacrifice is to be offered because the spirit is not really separate but is part of the divine life. And the man pours himself forth as part of the life universal, and in the expression of that life he shares the joy of his Lord. The mass suicides of Heaven's Gate and Jim Jones' cult were but miniatures of the outcome of a global Luciferic initiation. Current testimonies abound of near-death experiences which invariably describe an encounter with a being of light who sends reluctant souls back to earth to assure others that there is no judgment after death. New views of death are being formed through the corroboration of stories of a benign judge and afterlife. Alice Bailey even called death, quote, the great adventure, unquote, and comforts future victims of this strong delusion with these words. Our ideas about death have been erroneous. We have looked upon it as the great and ultimate terror, whereas in reality it is the great escape. It marks a definite transition from one state of consciousness into another. This, our present cycle, is the end of the age, and the next 200 years will see the abolition of death, as we now understand that great transition and the establishing of the facts of the soul's existence.
That's because everybody will be dead.
You know.
That's why you'll see the,
I mean, this is such a lie. It is such a deception for people. I mean, it actually exhorts them to die.
Now, one of the things you passed over, maybe by design, was the reference to the Promise Keepers.
Yeah, I did.
Did you do that on purpose?
Yeah, I did, because I tell you what, that's a touchy subject, and again,
but that's what we specialize in.
We really, that's another whole deal.
All right.
The Promise Keepers have allowed some secular and some occult teachings to seep into.
I mean, what do you get when you put 50,000 men in a stadium?
Well, truthfully, I've never gone for the concept.
I haven't either. And
but what's worse is that in their publications has seeped in a number of writings of not Christian people. And it has to be addressed. But, you know, I'll tell you what, one of my favorite writers, Robert Bly, poet, really, is involved in this. But he's a pantheist.
Yeah.
You know, Vermont boy, he's a pantheist. And that, you know, just you don't worship the created, you worship the creator. And I tell you right now, as you and I know, in our county politics, we're dealing with pantheists.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Any.
Yeah.
This bit about human sacrifice, though. And I want to give this website out. I want people to look at this because we talked about the sacrificial abuse and actual deaths of children in satanic cults. There's a website, www.missingpersons-ireland. All right, so that'll get you there, where it talks about all the ritual killings that are going on in Ireland and in England. But talking about human sacrifice, and this is what it's been said under the subhead Satanists, the Gentry, and Freemasons. Human sacrifice has been a terrible reality for possibly as long as man has existed on this world. The upper classes have brainwashed the naive and gullible masses into believing that these sorts of things only happen in books and myths. Very, very, very good point. History shows us that the aristocracy, especially those with old Norman roots, have been the pioneers and subsequently those with the greatest knowledge in the studies of these dark arts and forbidden knowledge, those of the cats in Bohemian Grove. The old Norman Knights Templars are believed to have been aristocratic devil worshippers. The Templars went to the Holy Lands during the Crusade Wars between the European Christians and the Saracens to search for the Arch of the Covenant. We think they mean Ark. It was spelled A-R-C-H. They believed that the Ark held magical powers, and those who had possession of it would be the recipients of great power and knowledge. In the Middle Ages, the Templars were seen as heretics and worshippers of the devil and were persecuted by the Spanish Inquisition and were banished from most European countries, with the exception of Portugal and Scotland. I think it's the Scotland to which they fled, by the way. It's believed that the Knights Templars resurfaced in Scotland, there you go, in its new guise of the Freemasons. In later years, many prominent lords and gentry, again descendants of the old Norman aristocracy, became leading figures in the Freemasons. One prime example was, in 1725, Richard Parsons, 1st Earl of Ross, was Grand Master of Ireland's Freemasons. At the same instance, Richard Parsons was also one of the founder members of Ireland's aristocratic Satanist cult, the Hellfire Club. Would you like to hear about the Hellfire Club?
Yeah, briefly. We got a couple minutes.
How much time do we have? About three?
3 minutes.
All right. They met in the Eagle Tavern on Dame Street in the city center. As their name suggests, they were rumored to practice black magic. Reputable historians acknowledge that these stories have a basis in fact. And here's the three possibilities. One, the Hellfire Club did indeed carry out black masses and orgies on Montpelier Hill. However, they had no mythos knowledge and merely used satanic regalia to spice up their bawdy drinking sessions. Possibility 2 of 3. On one famous visit to Montpelier Hill, the clubsmen set fire to the lodge while carousing within.
Well,
come on, give me a break.
That sounds like something I might do.
Not a good idea.
Now, I was at a party real quick that we rode a riding lawnmower around inside the house. So things like that can happen, you know. Okay.
All right. Tradition claims that this was a wager to see who could survive the flames of hell longest. This is incorrect. When Connolly, I forget what Connolly this refers to, but we'll go on. When Connolly built the lodge, a fairy cairn was broken. It was actually a huge elder sign placed there thousands of years before to trap a swarm of fire vampires. When the Hellfire Club, in parentheses, which was at the time a bunch of drunken fakers, encountered these horrific beings, they were seduced to worship Sathuga. The fire occurred when the cult summoned their master inside the stone vaulted lodge. Though the club disappeared in the 1740s, the fire vampires are still alive and hungry. And finally, here's the third possibility. A wandering priest stumbled, and I think that's a good choice of words,
yes.
Upon the club during a macabre bacchanalia and was forced to look on. Yeah, okay, sure.
You're here.
Yeah, who bent your arm, dude? The center of attention was a huge black cat. Ah, a Mephistelian symbol right there. Breaking free from his captors, the cleric... Oh, I guess he was under duress.
Yes.
The cleric grabbed the cat and uttered an exorcism which tore the beast apart. A demon shot up from its corpse. Hurtling through the roof, it brought down the ceiling and scattered the assembly. On another occasion, here you go, Tom Connolly of Castletown is said to have met the devil in the form of a black man in the lodge's dining room. The club was a branch of
the cleaning guy.
No, they don't mean, I don't think they mean an African American. Okay. I think they mean somebody who was dressed in black. The club was a branch of a suppressed English Nyar Lathotep, forget it, cult. After the death, why do they make these words so rough? After the death of its founder in 1741, the club became inactive, but the cult continued with the 2nd Earl of Ross as its leader. It was with the Nyar Lathotep's help that William Parsons, 3rd Earl of Ross, built the Parsonstown Leviathan in 1845. This huge telescope, this is interesting, was dismantled in 1908, was the largest of its kind until 1917. Though the Irish climate is completely unsuitable for serious astronomy, Ross discovered the spiral nature of the galaxies, the Crab Nebula, and other great nebula in Orion with his miraculous instrument. It's unknown whether his sons, Lawrence the 4th Earl and Charles, were involved in the cult, which has today spread throughout the English-speaking world, in which there are branches off in the United States and all kinds of weird dungeon-type situations. And that's the deal in the Hellfire Club.
Yeah, well, I guess we're going to have to pick up some more of this
yes.
in the next show. Can you give us kind of a quick overview?
Well, yeah, secret societies to include the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, some ritualistic killings that involve the Mormon Church. We have the Ordo Templi Orientis. You'll like that one. And Skull and Bones, of which our current president and his father were part of, yes.
You're listening to Dade City Community Radio. We will see you next week. From the Grassy Knoll is a production of Dade City Community Radio. This program highlights pertinent issues deliberately not reported by our managed information service. You are encouraged to rebroadcast this show on local grassroots, non-commercial stations. Also, you are invited to comment on this and other programs by emailing us at dcmicroradio@aol.com. For Dade City Community Radio, I'm Dr. Swain.